This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
18 minutes after 5 o'clock, Brian Wheeler joins me live in studio. He is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at cvilletomorrow.org. How are you, sir? It's good to see you. And
good.
We are we don't have Betty Mooney in studio with us today, or a member of the Citizens for a Sustainable Water Supply Plan. So
just you and me.
It's just you and I. So we will talk.
Well, of course, the phone lines are open.
They're always open at 977-1070 if anybody would like to join the program.
I'm a bit frazzled right now.
Are you?
It's been a tough day. I have an automotive story for you.
Okay. Oh, God.
Started last night, actually.
Oh, your car or somebody else's?
My car.
What do you drive?
It's a Volkswagen Passat 2001,
yeah.
Which I'm trying to keep running because I know economically that's the best thing I can do.
Yeah.
Just keep that thing running.
Is it diesel?
No.
Okay. Because some Volkswagens are diesel.
No. No diesel.
What happened?
So I took it. Well, it's been making all sorts of noises. If you had been outside the WINA studios any time in the past 2 weeks when I've driven up,
we would have known
you would have
coming.
Heard me coming. The creaks and groans on turns and then stopping. So it was turning noises and stopping noises. So brakes and what I think I learned were tie end rods or
ooh,
something.
Ooh, that's expensive.
Yeah, it added up. So I got it all fixed. $1,000 later.
Ooh, ouch!
For everything I needed done.
Gosh.
And then I took the car from where I got it fixed to the county office building because I had a meeting last night.
Yeah.
Come out of the meeting about 8:30, and I turn the key and little lights come on the dashboard, but nothing happens.
Oh, Lord.
So I knew it was a battery problem. So I called AAA. They came, record, jumped me. I got home. But I knew that I might have trouble, you know, this morning. So I backed my car into a parking spot so that Gene's van could jump me if I needed it.
Thinking ahead.
So I was thinking ahead, thinking for, you know, worst case planning here. And sure enough, in the morning, Gene's about to take son Sam to the orthodontist. I said, Gene, don't go yet. We got to check my car. Check my car. Same problem.
Did you get a clicking click? Is it?
It wasn't the click, 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 like a starter kind of problem.
Yeah.
It was just one click and then nothing. So it was the battery. At the end of the day, it was the battery. But so I called this service place in town. Can I come by? Can I just drop in?
The same place that fixed it before?
No, different place. Because I had to go to the Daily Progress to work on the voter guide. So my day today had two appointments. Go to the Daily Progress, produce the voter guide, which we'll talk about, and come to Coy's show.
Yeah.
So I thought I had an easy day.
Yeah.
So I start out, the car doesn't start. Call up a service place near the Daily Progress. Can I come in? Get the battery changed. No problem. Come on in. So I come in. In the meantime, to get to the service station, I had two errands I had to run. I had to go by the office, and I had to go by Mailing Services of Virginia, up 29 North.
Yeah.
In both those stops, I knew not to turn my car off. And like the whole time there, I'm saying to myself, don't turn the car off, don't turn the car off. Because, you know, it's so the habit is you just pull in the parking space, turn
the car
off.
You don't even think about it.
Right.
Yeah, you just cut it.
I was reminding myself the whole way, don't turn the car off.
Yeah.
I got through those two stops, just left the car running, you know, in the parking lot, unlocked and everything. And then I get to the service place. Pull in. I'm so confident they're going to have the battery for me. I turn the car off.
Yeah.
Let me check and see if we have the battery for the 2001 Volkswagen Passat. Oh, I'm sorry. We don't have that battery.
Holy cow.
I'm like, oh my gosh.
But they said that you could come by and get the new battery.
I didn't tell them what car I had. They just said they'd be happy to put in a battery. They didn't tell me if they had it.
Oh, man.
So, but they were very nice. I said, well.
I want to know if you were having battery problems before you went to the first mechanic.
I was not.
Why all of a sudden does the car not run?
Well, I don't know.
See, that's what I hate.
Bad luck.
Because you never know. Like, what's going on?
So the service place, I said, well, if you don't have the battery, can you at least give me a jump? Because I know when I walk out to my car, it's not going to start.
Yeah.
And it didn't start. So they jumped me. And then I went across the street to Sears, and they
bought a battery.
Very nice. They set me up.
And they'll put it in for you.
And I got to the Daily Progress with like 1 minute to spare for my appointment.
Oh, man.
But it's just
so you
stressful.
Should be good to go.
I should. Yeah, the rest of the day has been great driving around.
Yeah. Well, we take the car, we just take that for granted, that when we go out, the car's going to start and it's going to get us to where we need to go because we're all busy. We all got things to do. We all got to be somewhere like 5 minutes ago. You know, we're all rushing around.
Right.
And when your car's not cooperating to get you through a stressful, hectic day, man, It multiplies that stress by a million.
And imagine being somebody without a car, relying on public transit. You know, then to get, well, you'd have, I guess, you wouldn't have any car problems. But I have to be in so many different places around town. My job just doesn't really, I have to.
You got to run all over the place.
I'd rather not have to drive downtown, rather walk everywhere.
Do you like your car?
Yeah,
I guess you like it a whole lot now.
It's been a good car. It better be a good car for the next couple of years. Anyway, that's my transportation.
I am so sorry.
So I have lots of paper in front of me, and hopefully I can speak coherently about
I am so sorry.
Some of this news. There's been a lot of news the past 2 weeks.
There has been a lot of news, a bunch of news, and we also want to talk about the candidate forums. What between now and the bottom of the hour before we break for local news here at WINA, why don't you give us a rundown of these candidate forums? Because we got a lot of local elections. As we all know, when we are driving around in our cars, we see all the signs, and we hear the radio commercials. There's a lot of local elections coming up.
People are definitely paying attention. But in my experience, we had a city council candidate forum last week, Coy, that Charlottesville Tomorrow and the Free Enterprise Forum co-sponsored.
Just up the road.
And I was really disappointed because there were about 25 people at that candidate forum. Each of the candidate forums we had in the county, we had 40-plus people. So very low turnout.
And you had every city council candidate there.
We had everyone on there, including the write-in candidate, Andrew Williams, who's not been invited to all of the forums that have taken place.
That is disappointing.
25 people.
That's pretty lame.
Now,
Pretty lame, Charlottesville.
If you missed it and you want to hear it, the podcast is up on cvilletomorrow.org, so you can listen to it. We'll have a transcript shortly. But if you want to come, if you're feeling guilty now, and I hope you are, at the next opportunity is October 14th. What's today?
Today's the 13th.
Yeah, cancel that.
So it's not tomorrow?
No, because I just got a press release that says Wednesday, October 21st. So I think they've moved this.
So it's a week from tomorrow.
So our calendar is wrong, and I apologize for that. It is October 21st, 7 p.m., City Council Chambers. This will be the Alliance of Neighborhoods.
So that's a week from tomorrow, the next big City Council Candidate Forum.
And they've outlined some topics they want to talk about: traffic in the neighborhoods, public housing, community infrastructure, crime rates, the development process, city council, city-county relations, public transit, utility rates.
Boy, they're going to cover a lot of ground.
They're going to try to cover all that ground. So that's the 21st, 7 p.m. in council chambers.
There you go. How about the County Board of Supervisors? Beautiful downtown Albemarle County.
We do have two of those coming up, and that one is tomorrow. Tomorrow afternoon, the senior statesman will be having the County Board of Supervisor candidates, and that one's in the afternoon.
And there's a whole mess of them.
I didn't put the time down there, but I think it's 1 o'clock or so.
And they're having them all at the same time? Even the different districts?
Yes, they're having all of those candidates. I'm going to pull up the time here. So it is 1:30 at the Senior Center on Pepsi Place. Everybody knows where that is.
Yep.
So the senior statesman will have all the county candidates for the Board of Supervisors. We have three districts that are up for the election. Jack Jewett District, Dennis Rooker is unopposed. So no contest there. Samuel Miller District, open seat race. Sally Thomas is retiring. We've got three candidates of every flavor. The Democrat's Madison Cummings. The Republican is Dwayne Snow. And the independent is John Lowry. And then the Rio race, we have the incumbent Democrat, David Slutsky, who's the current chair of the board. And then we have the challenger, Rodney Thomas, the Republican. So I expect all of them to be there tomorrow.
Yeah, that's going to be good.
So Senior Statesman, 1:30 at the Senior Center. That's the 14th. And then another big one is October 22nd. The environmental groups get together in the community. Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population is the hosting group of this organization. But I know the Piedmont Environmental Council, I think the Sierra Club, several environmental groups get involved, and they will bring all the supervisor candidates together again October 22nd to talk about issues with an environmental perspective.
Now, when does your voter guide go out, the one that where you summarize all this stuff for people?
The Charlottesville Tomorrow Daily Progress Voter Guide, which I just signed off on, and it's being printed this week, will be mailed to every household that has a vote in the Samuel Miller and Rio districts of the county. And then a separate one, a city voter guide for everyone in the city. So two voter guides, one's county, one city. They will be mailed the week before the election, so the week of October 26th. If you go to our website and sign up to get our weekly emails, you will get an email link directly to the voter guide. You can download it on your computer. In the voter guide, we have 7 questions that we've pulled out of the many we ask them, but we pulled out 7 really good ones that I think differentiate the candidates a bit. And you can see where they stand on a whole host of issues.
There you go. So those will be hitting mailboxes, I guess, sometime next week?
Next week, we are getting them ready to mail the week of October 26th.
I see. Okay.
The last week of October is when you'll see it in your mailbox.
There you go. Halloween's almost here. Can you believe it?
Don't tell me that.
Can you believe it?
And the election is November 3rd. I mean, that is just around the corner.
3 weeks from today. Three weeks from today is the big election. Amazing. We're talking with Brian Wheeler, a little growth and development in local politics. We're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour for local news and weather and continue this conversation on the other side. It's 39 minutes after 5 o'clock, 21 before 6. This is Charlottesville Right Now, News Radio 1070 WINA. I'm Coy Barefoot, and I hope you're having a wonderful Tuesday afternoon. Thanks for joining me. Our conversation with entomologist Peter Warren about stink bugs has been rescheduled to tomorrow. We'll do that right at the top of the show. Everything you wanted to know about stink bugs tomorrow on the little show. We'll also talk with Ken Staples and the lone survivor of the 1959 plane crash, Phil Bradley, tomorrow on the program. Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at sevilletomorrow.org. He joins us live in studio on Tuesday afternoons. Let's start, if we can, with some of this growth news. The supervisors took action about some VDOT recommendations that we discussed here a couple of weeks ago that would totally have redrawn what we recognize today as Route 29 near Charlottesville.
They did, and these proposals sort of landed like objects from outer space in the minds of the Board of Supervisors and many people in the public who found their homes perilously close to these lines on the map. There were 3 surprises, Coy. We talked about 2 of them at the time. We talked about the extension of Leonard Sandridge Road, or the North Grounds Connector coming out of UVA, the idea that it would be there'd be a clover leaf kind of interchange on the 29-250 bypass, where right now Leonard Sandridge is sort of one way in, one way out.
Yeah.
There'd be a bigger clover leaf there.
I'm not opposed to that.
And you'd be able to cross over and then go around or through or by Stillhouse Mountain, as it's called, and connect up to various points north. One option would be to go along the path of the old Western Bypass right-of-way. So VDOT thought that was a good idea. They said basically, Charlottesville, Albemarle, we know you like parallel roads. We know you're thinking about 29 North and creating this network. Here's an idea for you. And we happen to have some land you can use. And so their suggestion was to extend Leonard Sandridge Road. The other big idea they had that no one had seen before was a elevated roadway over the Kroger, by the Quality Inn.
Our own mixing bowl.
Through the Red Lobster. You know,
it looks like Springfield, Virginia's mixing bowl.
It was the craziest map, a diagram I've ever seen them drop on this community. And nobody had seen it coming. So those were the 2 things we talked about.
Yeah.
The third one we didn't get to was what's called the Eastern Bypass. Eastern Bypass, far east, on the border of Albemarle and Louisa County.
Yeah.
This would be a road that would start in Culpeper, come down Route 15. There would be a new bypass around Orange. There would be then it would go further south, hit Gordonsville, new bypass around Gordonsville. And then it would keep on trucking into Albemarle County and eventually come into I-64. That's what's being called by this community as the Eastern Bypass proposal. Basically,
not the Eastern Bypass that we've talked about for a long time.
Not the Eastern Connector.
Yeah, to get people from Pantops to 29 North.
Right. Eastern Connector would just be a little local road, very short. This is a major corridor project in the Route 15 corridor.
This is a new parallel to 29 from Culpeper to 64.
Right.
I'm not opposed to that.
Basically,
that sounds,
what they're saying is
I would drive on
that
road.
We don't think we can get a handle on the growth and access management issues between Culpeper and Charlottesville because of what's going on in Greene County, what's going on in Madison County, and then Culpeper.
Yeah.
And so they're saying, well, let's just pencil in this road for a future corridor and let's just, you know, put a dot, we'll make it a dotted line. And what happened was the Board of Supervisors met last week, and by a 5-1 vote, they passed a resolution opposing, in particular, these three projects.
All three of them?
Yes.
Who was the one vote who didn't support?
Mr. Boyd did not support that, and we can talk about that in a second. But the, you know, basically they said they thought it was a disaster to put these lines on a map when there was no expectation of being able to fund these projects. Dennis Rooker made a point when they had a public meeting here and VDOT was showing these pictures for the first time. Dennis Rooker said, how dare you put, you know, lines through my district, and these will not be primary roads, and that's important. If it's a primary road, it's eligible for state funding, state federal funding. If it's a secondary road, then the county's got to save up the funds through their allocation to gather enough money to actually build something. And these are major road projects. I mean, Leonard Sandridge, if you wanted to extend that along the bypass route, I mean, that's a big project. Building that elevated interchange from hydraulic.
It's huge.
Into the, I mean, not
we
cheap.
We have money for that.
So, you know, Mr. Rooker was saying, you know, you're putting those lines on the map. There's no way you're going to fund them. You can't put the ball in our court to fund them. And so who are you kidding?
Yeah.
Was basically what Mr. Rooker told them. And this resolution basically put that in writing and said, we absolutely, as a county, Albemarle County opposes these proposals. You didn't run them by us beforehand. You don't have any traffic data to model and demonstrate that these are smart decisions.
Yeah.
And in fact, VDOT, your own staff are working with us on Places 29 on a whole different set of proposals.
Did this just come from a completely different office at VDOT?
Yeah, it did.
So there were different.
They hired a consultant.
There were totally different Oompa Loompas in another part of the factory that were cooking this up.
Well, you know, they had to be talking to each other, and certainly they mentioned Places 29 in their presentation and said, you know, we know you're working on that, basically, but here's some other ideas to throw into the mix. And so that's where the County Board of Supervisors is, putting on paper their concerns. And
but Ken Boyd did not join them in opposing these plans. Does he like one or three of these plans?
He said, I'm going to read from our story here. Ken Boyd said he also opposed the Eastern Bypass, so that route from Culpeper down to I-64.
That's the only good one.
But could not support the resolution, quote, because he believes VDOT should consider the extension of Leonard Sandridge Road. So that one in particular, he thought, you know, taking advantage of the Western Bypass route. And he said, you know, I don't care what you call it, parkway, parallel road, bypass. Mr. Boyd has long said we need to factor into Places 29 some use of the route, of the Western Bypass right-of-way,
yeah,
for a parallel road.
Wouldn't that go right through a neighborhood, though? If you took Leonard Sandridge Road across the bypass straight up, that goes through a neighborhood, right?
Canterbury Hills is right there, which is off of Barracks Road. So it could go right in the backyard within feet,
yeah,
of homes of Canterbury Hills.
I guess Ken Boyd doesn't represent Canterbury Hills.
That's in the that's in the Jack Jewett district. Dennis Rooker's taking care of business on that front. But, you know, Mr. Boyd does represent the eastern part of the county where...
So he did oppose the Eastern Bypass,
he opposed that side.
He supported the other two that weren't in his neighborhood.
But he's been consistent on that front. He's long been, I think, frustrated, he would say, that the Western Bypass route was taken off the table as far as Places 29 was concerned.
Yeah.
He was always an advocate for that and felt like it should have been looked at.
Interesting. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at seavilletomorrow.org. It's our Tuesday growth and development update. And quickly, there was some new news regarding the water issue, he said with a heavy sigh.
Yes, we'll go through this quick, Coy.
Because I don't care.
These stories are on seavilletomorrow.org. You can read them and listen to them at your leisure. But the news is, and we just want to make sure people know, City Council did approve a less detailed dredging feasibility study. So the study of dredging is moving forward, and the cost is going to be in the neighborhood of $300,000. So the City Council got what they thought were the essential ingredients in that. And again, what City Council is trying to do is figure out how much it will cost to dredge South Fork Ravanna Reservoir back to its original capacity so that that could be factored into a water plan for the future of the community. That's what they're trying to figure out. The Board of Supervisors was briefed on that a couple days later by Tom Frederick with the Ravanna Water and Sewer Authority, and you can see what both parties had to say, and you can listen to Mr. Frederick talking to them directly. So that was the news on the dredging front. And then there was some good discussion about the cost of dams. Ragged Mountain is the other reservoir that's being talked about as part of the water supply. And the question City Council was asking this past week was, what are the real costs of building on top of the 1908 dam that's already there versus building a new dam? And Mr. Frederick and the City Council got into that in some detail. There's also Kiara Kanzi from Sevo Weekly has a good story summarizing that discussion in today's Sevo Weekly.
He said, that's one thing I didn't understand. The new consultant says it's more expensive to repair the old dam than build a new one, which is the opposite of what Gannett Fleming told us.
That is correct. Schnabel Engineering said that. Well,
Schnabel. I love that word.
What I can do, Coy, is reflect what Mr. Frederick said. So I'll just say what I'll try to restate what he said. These are not my words, but
Get ready. Let me put on my seatbelt.
Well, what he said was that in Schnabel Engineering's assessment, it was going to cost more money to build on the existing dam. That was, quote, their professional judgment. If they wanted a firm estimate on the cost differential, they could study that. But that would require more study.
That's what these people do. These consultants, you pay them a bunch of money to advise you, and you ask them these questions. And then they give you like a half an answer and say, now, if you want the full answer,
well,
you got
to
pay
fair,
us more.
Though, to be fair, Coy, we are a community that asks lots of questions of consultants.
but this is happening all over America, and this is how these people make a living. And I guess there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just frustrating when you're paying the dime.
Well, you know? And Mayor Norris was pushing back and said, how much would that cost? And the estimate was less than $500,000, but more than $50,000. So somewhere in the $50,000 to $500,000 range is what it would cost. But the what he said was, and this is the important thing, I think, for the public to think about, the new engineering firm came along and said, listen, if you want to build on top of something that was put there in 1908, and there's a 1913 report raising safety concerns about the construction of that dam, if you want to build on it, no matter what you do, you have to take this earthen embankment that was put on after the fact on the downstream side for safety reasons. After the 1913 report, they basically put a bunch of earth on the downstream side to help, you know, keep that dam in place.
Yeah.
And if you want to build on top of it, you got to take that back. It's sort of like adding onto your house. You know, you have to strip down, you have to peel the siding off, you have to strip down and expose the underlying infrastructure.
Right.
If you want to attach onto it. And what Mr. Frederick told City Council was that they would have to take that earth off. If you take the earth away from the downstream side, you have to drain the reservoir. Once you drain the reservoir, then you can safely check the foundation of that dam and dig around it in order to prepare for something bigger to be put on top of it.
You got to drain it anyway, though, if you're going to build a new dam, right?
No, you don't. See, that was one of the beauties of, in the minds of the Ravenna Water and Sewer Authority, that if you built a dam downstream, you could leave the existing one in place, maintain the water supply capacity you have.
And just flood it.
And then build it downstream. And remember, I told you, I asked one of the experts on the dam panel, how do you then wreck the dam that's there? And remember, he said that they basically take this saw and run it through the dam to slowly, you know, let it start bleeding through and equalize the pressure on both sides.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler. The phone lines are open, 977-1070. Elizabeth is waiting patiently on this lovely Tuesday afternoon on line one. Elizabeth, you're on with Brian. Go right ahead.
I think the extension for Leonard Sanders Road is a great idea.
And why is that?
Well, I think it would eliminate a lot of traffic, you know, for people going to JPJ, people going over Davenport Field, Klockner Stadium. I mean, a lot of people have to, you know, go down Milmont and Arlington and go, you know, and it would eliminate a lot of traffic off the side roads.
Now, do you think, this is Brian, do you think the work done there, in your mind, would a cloverleaf interchange there and not extending it work? I mean, like, if you could go both ways.
Yeah, be able to go both ways. I think going one, just being able to use that road from just one way is dumb.
When they put it in, I was thinking, this is gonna be cool. You could go left or right out of here, east or west on the bypass. But she's right; it only goes one way.
So that's another possibility: not extend the road, but instead build a better interchange.
Just build it,
not extending it all the way through. Just be able to build it like a cloverleaf, so people can go get off that road and get on that road in both directions.
Yeah, and you don't even need a cloverleaf. You need a bridge that goes to the other side of the road.
Yeah, well, like a bridge.
And on and off ramps on the other side of the road.
Yeah, off-ramp,
Yeah, that would be nice.
All right, there's a new idea.
There you go. Thanks, Elizabeth. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Absolutely, appreciate the call. We're talking with Brian Wheeler. Now, of course, extending the road north is going to tick off all the people in Canterbury Hills and in those neighborhoods that north, because you're talking about running a major parallel road to 29 right up through that area.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to live in Canterbury Hills if they were doing that.
But now some of those developments further north, Coy, of course, they sold their right of way already. A lot of those homes are owned by VDOT and have always had, that mark on them that this is a place where a road may come someday.
And that, isn't it the case that if VDOT doesn't use the right-of-way for the bypass, that they're going to lose it at some point? Like, is it 2011?
I think
there's a deadline.
I think it's a 20-year window, I want to say, and they do have to decide to do something.
That's where this is coming from. Hey, we got to use this right-of-way.
And I think what the Board of Supervisors has said is, we've got an idea for you, VDOT. Just sell it back to the original owners, and whatever money you get, apply it to the better ideas that are in places 29. That's the view of the Board of Supervisors.
And Ken Boyd.
And they think they can make that happen through the Commonwealth Transportation Board, that Butch Davies would support them with that.
There you go. Let's go back to the phones. Dee Dee is on line one. Dee Dee with Citizens for a Sustainable Water Supply Plan. How are you?
Hey. Hi, Coy. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good.
Listen, I'd like to ask a question about this building on the existing dam at Ragged Mountain. I was at the city council meeting where Mr. Frederick was talking about this with city council, and it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, everyone seems to be ignoring the fact that Gannett Fleming did a rather extensive engineering study in 2003 on exactly this question and came to the opposite conclusion. In fact, that's what Dave Norris was asking Mr. Frederick. Mr. Frederick claimed not to know a lot about the study, but then went on to talk about what is just an opinion of Schnabel. So I'm asking, my question to you, Brian, is why haven't we seen more about this 2003 engineering study that was actually a field study?
Good question, Dee Dee. I think, it's a couple interesting things. I just listened to the audio of that meeting. I was not there, but I listened to it before coming over here. And I did not hear Frederick say, and he may have later in the meeting, but at that point in the meeting, I didn't hear him say, I don't know about that study. What I heard him say was, when I got here, I asked some difficult questions of Gannett Fleming about their work on that. And one of the things he said was, if we do what you're proposing, do we have to drain Ragged Mountain? And they said, oh, no, we're not. According to Frederick at the meeting, Gannett Fleming was saying, well, we're not sure, we'd have to study that further. And so what Frederick told city council was that he gave them that Gannett Fleming provided some construction-only cost numbers. One of the only places I have seen those referenced is by Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan, who is an organization, as you know, Dee Dee, that has questioned most all of Gannett Fleming's work and numbers, especially on the dredging front. So this number, though, was I know put forward by Kevin Lynch as part of a series of solutions and alternatives. Here's a number for fixing the Ragged Mountain Dam and keeping it at its current height, because it does have safety problems. Everyone acknowledges that. Here's a number for raising it 13 feet. And what I heard Tom Frederick say was, the new firm that's in town, given the additional information they have received, and the Mayo's Rock report from 1913 was not something that Gannett Fleming had access to, as far as I know, and it came up afterwards. So I think what he was saying was, in 2008, when they asked Gannett Fleming to leave town, those were among the questions that he was challenging them on, that he thinks the community needed better advice.
Dee Dee, thanks for the call. We are out of time. We're going to take a break here for CBS News, local news and weather. We'll be back with Best Seat in the House in just a few minutes. Brian, thank you very much.
Thank you, Coy.
You can learn more online at SeaVilleTomorrow.org.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.